Beams of Darkness by Sam Gabriel. From Thanks for Playing. Read by the author. Based on the works of Andrew Hussey and Clutch. Chapter 6. Beneath Your Head. Be past Nepeta. Your name is Nepeta Lejean, and you have decided to die with your eyes open. You have decided your last breath will be a purr. You have decided your last thought will be of home. You have decided your last emotion will be contentment. Having decided all of these things, you make the last decision you will ever make, and press the flashing button. A blast of navy blue washes over you. You wait for the world to implode around you, or explode, or dissolve into nothing. Your eyes start watering. Only when you begin to realize that you are not going to die, do you allow yourself to blink, and as you blink, you begin to realize a great many more things. You see, when you touched Terezi Pyrope's heart, when you grabbed hold of it, tried to take all of it, put it into your own, it wouldn't fit. It was too big. There was too much of it, and it was the wrong shape. Not the wrong shape, but the right shape in the wrong way. You aren't making any sense. What Terezi Pyrope's heart felt like was a heart made of hearts that were themselves made of hearts. What is something like that called again? You know it has a name. You have nothing to compare her heart to, of course, but just as you know instinctively how to use your wings, you know that hearts don't usually feel like this, and they don't usually contain this much information. Information that you still have, because when you grabbed Terezi Pyrope's heart made out of hearts, one of them broke off. And you don't think she noticed. No, that's not right. She did notice. She told you to take a piece, after all, and she knew it would give you this much information, and she knew that it would take you this long to chew through all of it. You've barely scratched the surface even now, but she knew what to say to you, how to say it, to make you find the things she needed you to find, tell her what she wanted you to tell her, think about what she wanted you to think about. But she still gave you everything. Because this is everything you think. You think each piece of Terezi Pyrope's heart of hearts is the whole thing somehow. Each piece contains the multitude of the whole. All you have to do is look at it more closely, and it gets bigger, and it looks just like the whole thing. What's the word for that? But this just isn't what hearts are normally like. You are the rogue of heart. You know this. A heart is who a person is. The basic emotional needs that drive a person, that make them who they are, that govern who they form attachments to and why, that all coalesce into their innermost self. Terezi Pyrope's innermost self, her innermost self of innermost selves, contains a lot more than that. It contains facts and figures, it contains strategic models, it contains protocols, algorithms, complex applications of motivational theory, it contains nearly 2 million sweeps of memories, meticulously organized into libraries, Solix would have called them databases, designed to facilitate multifaceted approaches to narrative manipulation. Narrative manipulation? You look closer and it gets bigger. You are aware that the universe you live in is shaped like a story. You've won 2 whole games of Scrub, after all, but you had never before seen the outline of that story, felt its pacing, known its themes, heard alternate tellings of it, discarded ideas, apocrypha, notes scrawled on a napkin, the swirlings of what will or might or could possibly happen next in the mind of its author. Terezi Pyrope's innermost self has. And now? So have you. Even though you're still just scratching the surface, you look closer and it gets bigger. You see the shape of the whole emerge from within it. See that it is made up of just as many pieces as the whole had been, the whole that couldn't fit within you, but now it is within you, somehow, impossibly, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, but it always looks the same no matter how big it gets. What is that called? Gasping, you pull back. and look at more familiar things, the cave walls of your mind, the paint that splattered them in random patterns in the agony and ecstasy of your ascension across their now infinite expanse. The patterns are not random, you now see. They repeat themselves within themselves. Each is made up of smaller versions of itself. They did not change since you last saw them. Your ability to perceive them has changed. You have changed. Your eyes fly open. The first thing you see is the arrow, still embedded in the blast-off device that carried you here. It was Equius who told you what the word for this was. Sweeps back, he told you, on Alternia. When he was trying to explain something about math that you didn't give two swipes about, it was just fun listening to him talk.
AC remembers what the word was. It was fractal, she says. AC thinks for a moment. I wonder why Terezi let me know all this stuff, she says. AC digs through the big pile of memories and junk for the answer, and finds it. AC says, because Terezi never imagined for a second that I would still be alive right now. And she was wrong, concludes AC sagely. AC wonders what else Terezi Pyrope was wrong about.
Days in the future, but not many. Unfortunately, there's not a lot that Terezi Pyrope was wrong about. And a lot that she was right about, and a lot of things that she has done, is still doing, plans to do in the future. It takes a long time to sift through it, and you aren't even close to done. You don't think you ever will be. And some of it nearly breaks you. Like what she did to Tavros, Aradia, Aridin, Salix, and Feferi, you knew she killed them, but you didn't know how. You would have preferred not to know how. You would also have preferred not to know what she is still doing to Kanaya and Equius. To John and Jane. But not your John and Jane. Your John and Jane died where and how everyone thinks they did. You could still feel their blood on your hands, Terezi's hands. Terezi's hands, tying a noose around her own neck, or around your Terezi's neck at 5 sweeps old. Right now you are thinking about all of these things, turning each of them over and over in your think pen, in your heart, in your innermost self, these things, and one more thing. What Terezi Pyrope has done to the Troll Kingdom. Where its wigglers come from. What is happening to the Mother Grub right now. How long it has been happening for. It is this last thing above all others that has you standing on the highest point of the tallest building on Dursa's moon, staring at the ground far, far, far below, and wondering if you would wake up.
Is that Santa?
You whirl around and stumble and slip and fall, and your wings catch you, and you hover, and it's Roxy. And she is wasted.
Is that another fancy Santa? Fucking fancy-ass Santas all the time hanging out on roofs in their big gay red suits with presents for all the good boys and girls, but none for Roxy. Because they're mean and stupid and won't listen just because I'm drunk. Who cares if drunk? I still know things, fucking lots of things. Like I know Rose is a mean, stupid bitch who's mean and stupid and a bitch and is trying her best in a really bad situation. Hey!
You take her glass and pour it out.
Mean Santa. Stupid Santa. Santa who is a girl for some reason. I'm going to support you in your transition, Santa. Your raisins numb my beeswax.
She leans over the side of the building and evacuates her digestion bladder. You grab her before she falls off and sit her down on a crenellation. Her body starts to lose its form.
Santa, you're getting real blurry. I think I'm waking up from dream, maybe. But even though you're mean and stupid, just like Rose Lalonde. Merry Christmas.
She's almost completely transparent now. And you remember, suddenly, like an idiot, that you have the power of speech.
Well, Roxy, don't go.
Can't hear you.
I'm not Santa, I'm Nepeta.
Please speak up.
I know Trezzy's whole plan, Roxy.
Not nothing.
You have to save the Mother Grub!
You see her one moment, and then she is gone. In her place, a glass of milk and a plate of oatmeal raisin cookies. They are the first things you have eaten since ascending, and they are delicious. You sit, back resting on a steeple, one leg dangling over the side, Instead of looking straight down, you widen your view and take in the whole cityscape, from horizon to curved horizon. This is something you have tried not to do since you emerged from the core. It's chaos. Hordes of Carapacians screaming at other hordes of Carapacians that the prophecy was a lie, or that it was true but they weren't worthy of it, or any number of reasons that Durs has been abandoned by its god. Factions have formed, lines have been drawn, battles, riots, looting, burning. It's so much, it's so huge, and you don't know what to do. But you want to do something. You remember Terezi calling you a hero, and your skin crawls. But as you down the last of the milk, you also remember Equius, the real Equius, your Equius, the one who taught you how to be strong by being weak and became strong when you were weak.
And as Acy dives off the roof and swoops into the fire on her big sparkly wings, she remembers Dave. And she remembers Roxy, too. And she thinks to herself, shit, let's be Santa.
Perigee's in the future, but not many. It is far from the last time that you see Roxy on Durs. She is always about that drunk or drunker, but she's usually there for longer. And she's usually at least a little more coherent than she was that first time. But every time is the first time, as far as she's concerned. On the occasions when she isn't mistaking you for a fancy Santa or a really close-up fairy or troll cat girl Dirk, she is always shocked and amused and weepy to see you. And you have to explain everything again. It's a little hard to get much of anything done, and there is plenty that you want to try to get done with her, supplies being one of the main things because Carapacians overcook their meat in that they cook it at all, and apart from that, you haven't been able to figure out what kind of meat it is, and you have a feeling that it might be Carapacian meat, and you can feel their hearts now, and that makes it weird. But Roxy to the rescue. She's very happy to help, at least on her more subdued visits, and she void swipes you all kinds of stuff. Her powers are easier for her to use when she's here, so it's almost anything you need. Food, clothes, tons of brushes and paint, books, even a new computer. But no connection, and that's the main thing you want to get done. You have to get a message to the outside. The two of you have tried everything. Well, not everything.
I want to give you some of my heart.
Oh, baby.
This is serious.
That should be a blood pumper anyway.
Blood pusher. And no, I mean heart.
Oh, baby.
I'm going to try to make you tell them. You got to tell them everything.
Thumbs up. Heart emoji. Waggles eyebrows because heart emoji. You place one hand over your pusher and the other over hers. And at first, you don't think it's going to work at all. As a human, she is so different from you in fundamental, and you are now seeing structural ways. It's difficult to find a place to put part of yourself.
She tries really, really hard, and it almost doesn't work, but she figures it out. It's only a little piece, but it should be enough.
Sweeps in the future, but not many. A little piece is not enough, not even close to enough. What a little piece gets you, apparently, is paintings on the walls of the bunker of nothing in particular. What as big a piece as you can manage right now gets you is better paintings on the wall of the bunker, of nothing much in particular, which is progress, but not in the right direction, not in any direction, really, which is the point. You can make Roxy Lalonde want to paint things on the walls, even things that remind her of you, but only of her waking memories of you. You can't make her write the words, Nepeta is alive, or brooding cavern equals factory, or Terezi wants Vriska, because Roxy Lalonde doesn't know any of those things. You don't even know a whole lot of what Roxy Lalonde does know as well, because what you get from her when she visits is fairly damn random. She doesn't sit around in the bunker making lists of things it'll be important to tell you the next time she sees you, because she never knows she's going to see you next time, or has ever seen you even once since you died. So every time, during every single conversation, you have this maddening feeling that there might be some massively important piece of intel or other that she's sitting on, and she just isn't bothering to tell you because the concept of you being alive is so fresh to her every time that she hasn't had a chance to organize her drunken-ass thoughts around it. And of course, you have no idea what questions to ask to figure out whether there's anything to that maddening feeling or not, because you can't read her mind. It's like chasing prey that's so good at hiding, you don't know if it exists at all. Wait, back that up? read her mind. Oh, you are a complete idiot. You are a complete idiot, and it's a really good thing you haven't had many chances to practice using your powers in this way. Because if you had figured out how to put enough of yourself in Roxy to get a message out, Terezi would know. Roxy's going on missions now. And even if she wasn't, anything she managed to convey would be in the minds of people who were. And the next time any of them went outside, Terezi would know. And she would know it was you who told them, because she is way too good at this not to. You've been trying to hunt Terezi Pyrope, and right now, Terezi Pyrope doesn't know that you exist at all. That is an enormous advantage. If she found out you were here, you would become just as much prey as everyone in the bunker is, so even if you could get a message out, it would have to contain intel so good that it would outweigh the benefit of your existence being a secret. And you don't have intel that good. You know enough about Terezi and Aqueous Sprite's operation to know that there is no back door, no hidden weakness, no password that'll let your friends skip past the hard part and put a bullet between Terezi's eyes. If anything, Terezi's biggest secret is that she is even more overwhelmingly powerful and in command of the entire planet than she appears to be, and that's not going to win any wars, is it? So you start to focus more on other things, like how much you've started to fucking hate Roxy. She is just a disaster of a person, weak when she should be strong, deferential when she should be pushy, takes way too much shit from Rose, just keeps holding out hope, does Roxy, that someday Rose will figure her shit out. The similarities to how you used to be with Aqueous are too obvious to avoid obsessing over, and what it all adds up to is that Roxy Lalonde is exactly the right kind of frustrating. And cute. And oh no, this is stupid. Nothing can possibly happen because literally every time you see her, she cannot possibly give consent. Of course she can't. The fact that she cannot possibly give consent is the only reason that she can possibly see you, and that just pisses you off more. And it sucks so much because it's been so long for you and she never even has at all, you don't think, and that just... So you start to focus more on other things. Like how much you miss Jade. So you start to focus more on other things. Like the Carapacian Holy War. Which is going fairly well. Better than it has been going, anyway. So far, you've been letting things settle into place. Hunting the worst, saving the best. Real hero stuff, yeah. It's fun. It wasn't supposed to be just fun, though, is the thing. It was supposed to be you doing something. Now it's more just something to do. You take stock. The whole war, overall, has been really complicated. The atheists, the good guys, are winning, generally, to the extent that there are more of them now, but they aren't a unified faction. The Eyes of the Seer are. Led by the catechistic demagogue, the Eyes of the Seer believe that the one true seer's absence is temporary, and the people must watch and judge themselves until she comes again, for she will come again, for it is written, etc. That kind of fear is powerful. And it wasn't hard for the Eyes to take over and subsume the Krakarians, the Mindful, the Pyrites, and the rest of the various pro-seer splinter groups. The catechistic demagogue has them all in a stranglehold, and the unorganized atheists are losing ground every day to his systematic ruthlessness. They have had leaders, briefly, but the apostate recusant was assassinated soon after he rose to prominence, as was the wrathful visionary. As was the heretical bishop. You, of course, cannot be a leader in the traditional sense. Carapacian speech is unknowably alien to trolls and humans. Even their hearts are difficult to decipher. It's a good thing their system of writing isn't, and that they love newspapers so much. Well, if you can read, then there's no reason that... Okay. Time to start getting creative.
AC stands up. Has a nice long stretch, reaches into her Silodex, and starts painting the town red and blue and green.
Even more sweeps in the future, but still not all that many. They call you the notorious logophile. They call you the noted laureate. They call you the nomadic luminary. Your works cover skyscrapers, they span bridges, they run through streets and thoroughfares, they twist and meander their way down alleyways into sewers. They are words, pictures, kaleidoscopes of design that pour from your heart over every surface you can reach across the entire moon of Durs. and as they seep into the very fabric of that canvas, hearts begin to change. Among the throngs and throngs and throngs that comprise the rapidly growing atheist superfaction known as the Unseen, you are called by one name above all other names: the Rogue. But today, Roxy Lalonde has a new name for you.
Oh, for God, it's Animal from the Muppets!
What?
Animal from the Muppets! You're my favorite! Even more than Miss Piggy.
I am not Animal from the Muppets!
That sounds just like something Animal from the Muppets would say.
No, it doesn't!
Oh my God, Animal from the Muppets, I gotta tell you, the news is such good news. Latch and Carcatch came over, and we're gonna save Mama Grub and make troll babies and seize the means of reproduction and live happily ever after. Oh, don't cry, Animal from the Muppets. Don't cry, don't cry, don't cry. I say it's good news. Best news. It's hug time.
Okay, it's huggy time.
I love the Animal from the Muppets. I love everybody!
It takes you a long, long time to calm down. And the whole time, she squeezes you like you're made out of felt. Which is fine, because you might as well be. You just stand there, while she keeps squeezing you and keeps talking, and talking, and talking. For the past 7 sweeps, your dreams have been full of concrete walls, charred flesh, a pair of screaming eyes surrounded by straps and chains. Jane Crocker, hands aglow, weaving strips of matriarchal flesh back into place over a message engraved in 5 tons of crimson metal. You have seen the words of this message not just here, not just wrapped around the Mother Grub's blood pusher, but in a number of other places on Earth's sea as well. Places that Terezi Pyrippi refers to by a term she took from the mind of Dirk Strider. Shelling points. You know that these are places to which an enemy of Terezi Pyrippi would naturally gravitate, places where a clear, obvious, and achievable victory can be seen. You know that it doesn't matter which one of them Rose chooses, because all of them have been arranged with the same basic prerequisite. She must, in order to pursue any of them, have become desperate enough to risk not just her own life, but also Latch's life, the life of the entire resistance, to achieve the objective. You know that this will mean that Rose has been made as miserable as she can stand for as long as she can stand it, that misery has run its course as a means to keep the heroes stagnant, that if Terezi wants the heroes to remain stagnant, she must now allow them to make themselves happy through struggle and tension and drama. You know all of this, and you know one more thing. Skaia will not accept the story if it is not real. The struggle must be real. The risk of failure must be real. The danger must be real. And Operation Infiltrate the Brooding Caverns of the Troll Kingdom on Earthsea in order to locate and abscond with the Sacred Mother of your people, and in so doing seize the means of reproduction, secure the future of trollkind, honor the memory of a friend, and destabilize the power base of Terezi bulge-sniffing, gape-licking, bucket-diving Pyrippi, will fail.
And she knows it'll fail. Because Roxy Lalonde is going. And she's always drunk and useless. And she knows it'll fail because Roxy Lalonde is making everyone's disguises. And she doesn't know anything about trolls. And she knows it'll fail because Roxy Lalonde is gonna learn everything she knows about trolls from Latch. And Latch is a meat pan. AC always liked Latch, but come on! AC wants to know why Car Kitty, of all people, thinks a Teal from before us, who hasn't gone outside in 7 sweeps, is gonna understand how blood works in the Troll Kingdom!
Oh. AC realizes it's because Car Kitty hasn't gone outside in 7 sweeps either. But AC has. AC was only on Earthsea for a parody or two, but she's been to the Troll Kingdom a few times. Enough times to understand it. At least better than Car Kitty. And better than Latch. And better than Roxy fucking Lalonde. And now AC is crying again. And Roxy Leland is still squeezing AC, so AC squeezes her butt, and they stand there, push her to push her, and AC screams and yells and cries and cries and cries until her fractal heart breaks. And this time, only half of AC watches Roxy Leland fade away from the moon of Durs.
Be present, Jade. The Spire is once again on red alert. The staff in the war room is investigating any leads they can find. Roxy is still investigating hers. All you can think is that this looks too much like the infirmary back on the bunker. Well, no, that's not all you can think. The bottle Roxy found in Zazerpan's room was empty, but the plastic wrapper was still there. Zaz hates clutter. She would have thrown it away, unless she'd just taken it off. Roxy drank only half that much just now. And now there she is, in the bed in the middle of the room. The bed you carried her to, not with your powers, in your arms. You wouldn't let anyone else help. The IVs drip. The machines go beep. Latch hunches over Roxy at the head of the bed, attempting to do some mindy thing or other. She's trying to get an insight into Roxy's condition, more or less. It's more specific than that. Something to do with aspects, and Latch is really bad at explaining stuff. The absurdly tall woman huffs in irritated frustration and leans back in her chair, arms folded. The tension doesn't leave her face. Next to her, on the other side of the bed, Rose raises a hand, but Latch stops her with a shake of the head. Rose nods and puts her hand back down. Whatever Latch is trying, she's still trying it. Next to Rose, broad shoulders shift. That doesn't usually happen. Dirk doesn't normally move like that. He mutters something, and Rose cocks her head with a curl of the lip. Dave, on Dirk's other side, snorts. At the foot of the bed nearest to the door, Carcat strides, a pacing monolith. Sometimes briefly pausing to give or receive a pat from Dave, sometimes pausing next to you to place a massive hand on your shoulder. All of this you see in your peripheral vision. Your eyes never leave your wife.
When I first asked her, you know, about wanting to have kids, she said, good thing you asked your girlfriend before anyone else, Gigi. I thought she was joking.
Jake doesn't stir next to you, but he's listening.
I mean, she kind of was, because it was her, Rose, and Rose was married, but I thought we were just friends. Friends with, you know, with benefits and birth control and all the dates we've been going on. I thought those were just girls' nights. And when I told her that, she said, we are girls, Gigi.
Jake smiles. You don't look at him, but you know. At least someone has a more embarrassing dating story than the ballad of Swiffer Eggmop and Jake English.
I asked her later what the kids' last names should be, whether we were going to hyphenate her. I felt like she was doing all the work, really, so just Lalonde would have been fair, you know? I would have been fine with that. But she just laughed and said, that's dumb and confusing. Not funny confusing, just regular kind. They can be Harleys. And you know what? Me too. Fuck it. That's how she proposed to me. Fuck it.
Your mouth moves for no reason and in no direction for a few minutes before words start coming out of it again.
She's so small, Jake. I carried Becky to bed last week, just last week, and he was heavier than his mom. How is that even possible? I feel like I never gave him enough attention because, you know, Zaz needed, well, she needed a lot of attention. We would always say she acted more like a cat than a dog.
In appearance as well. Smaller ears, longer tail. I never wanted to say anything.
No, we thought so too. I actually ended up running some more tests just for that, but no. Nothing but human and canine DNA. But she knew she looked like a cat. Even when she was little, she would twitch her ears this certain sort of feline way. just to get me to growl. And she'd laugh and laugh and laugh. She was such a little shit chick. I loved her so much.
Love.
What?
Not loved. Love.
I know, Jake, I know, but it hurts. It hurts so much to hope.
Of course it does.
How can you fucking stand it?
Well, the truth is, Jade, I didn't. I couldn't. For many years.
Why now, Jake? Why not last week? Last week when I still had Becky to carry to bed.
You've been talking quietly, trying to, still trying to. You won't like this answer, Jade. I don't like this answer, but we didn't need hope then as much as we do now. Try to, I know.
Well, I'm happy it's so easy for you, Jake. You don't have kids, you don't know.
You are still talking very, very quietly. That's true enough, Jade. I don't have kids of my own to look after and worry about. I have yours. And they've always looked after me. And so have you. And so has Roxy. And Roxy, well, Roxy will get to the bottom of this, Jade. Of course she will. She's a Harley, after all. That means she's an English. She will find them. Just you wait.
Wait.
You lean against him. He wraps an arm around you.
I hope so, Jake.
You wait. Be past Nepeta. It is bizarre to be in two bodies at once. Both are aware of each other and both are you. Completely you. Each half of your heart contains all of you. More or less, that is how a fractal works. But even this full copy of you, this... what even is this called? Is there a word for it? You think this might be what Terezi Pyrope calls a splinter. Whatever. Even this you that is inside Roxy Lalonde is still not in charge, and you still can't make her do things. At least not directly. You can't tell is the problem. You can't tell what's motivating her actions moment to moment, probably because that's a mind thing, you aren't sure. What you are sure about is that you can see, hear, smell, taste, and touch everything she can. All of it. And it is bizarre. Especially when it comes to Jade. It's been 7 sweeps, almost 8 sweeps for you by now, and you'd only been interested in her for about a sweep or two before you got sent to Moon Jail, but you have been so lonely. And you can't tell why Roxy's hitting on her. You don't know if she was doing it before. You don't even know if she's aware that she's doing it now, and you can't tell why she's doing it now. And that's when you start wondering whether this was an okay thing to do. Maybe you should have wondered that earlier. Maybe you should have thought about this at all before doing it. Concrete walls, charred flesh, a pair of screaming eyes surrounded by straps and chains. Days in the future, but not many. Roxy already hesitates when she reaches for a bottle, so you get angry, and so does she. And sometimes that makes her stop, and then sometimes turns into most times, and then most times turns into all the times, and then she stops reaching at all. Days in the future, but not many. You get frustrated and curious when Latch puts too many well-you-knows and it's-whatevers into her lessons. Roxy asks follow-up questions, presses points, goes and bothers Carcat when something Latch says doesn't make sense, or doesn't match with the intelligence reports about the Troll Kingdom. He gets mad, but it's important. Silly Carcat. You really miss him. You're glad that he's happy with Dave. Mostly. Days in the future, but not many. You get offended when a concept sketch for a troll sona is too stereotypical for whichever blood cast, or too implausible, or when Roxy tries changing her eyes from pink to rust with contacts and it doesn't look right. Trolls look strangers directly in the eyes to discern blood color, and can spot the right hue with a glance. It's always obvious. You get her on the right track. Jade looks so cute with those horns on. Days in the future, but not many. Back on the moon of Durs, you aren't doing much. Mostly meeting with the few unseen who know how to find you, and having long, scribbly conversations about strategy and outreach. You aren't amazing at either thing in a logistical sense, so you mostly offer affirmation and encouragement, which seems to be the main thing they need anyway. They offer again to start regular deliveries of food and supplies to your hideout. You decline again. Your stockpile is big enough to last another half a perigee or so, and Operation Abscond is only a week away. You can wait. Days in the future, but not many. You have seen the Troll Kingdom before, and when you see it again, you are ready for it. You are also ready for the factory, because you have seen it as well. You have seen it because Terezi Pyrope has seen it. Terezi Pyrope has seen it through every single pair of eyes that have ever stepped inside it or opened for the first time within it. She has felt every emotion behind every pair of eyes, has read every thought inside every think pen. And you want to say that the difference between her and you is that she didn't care what they saw, what they felt, what they thought. And you did, and still do, but that would be a lie. Because you felt what she felt as well, and she does care. She just doesn't think she does. She was lying when she called you insightful for guessing that 7 sweeps ago. She is lying to herself when she says that she cares about Vriska so much that nothing else matters, and she doesn't know she's lying. Because the last time she read her own mind was 1.5 sweeps ago. This is one of the things that Terezi Pyrope is wrong about. And you would rather dwell on that, rather dwell on the heart of Terezi Pyrope, than dwell on what you are now seeing and feeling and thinking. If you hadn't been ready, maybe it would almost have been easier. Maybe the shock of seeing the factory would make your mind just turn off. How is Latch still coping? She isn't coping well, but she is coping. You can see her slip, and see Rose slip, and prod Roxy into feeling maternal, you suppose, and that gets the job done. It isn't an emotion you entirely understand, but you have all of its components, more or less. A strange mix of bits and pieces of all 4 quadrants, plus a big dose of human love, which is very similar to flushed love, but it's more different than humans think it is, and you'd much rather dwell on that than what's coming. Because you're there. You're here. And Latch hits the floor like her strings were cut. Oh, fuck. You hadn't seen that coming. Why hadn't you seen that coming? You furiously dig through the heart of Terezi Pyrope, and it's obvious, it's so obvious, you're such a fucking meat pan. Every shelling point would need Latch. So Terezi set up countermeasures for her at each one. You knew they were there, but you hadn't put together why. You hadn't realized what would happen when Latch went down. Oh, fuck. Oh, fuck, oh, fuck, oh, fuck. You've never felt more naked in your entire life. And there's Terezi. It isn't really her, but there's no way to make Roxy realize that, and it doesn't matter anyway. All that matters is that Terezi is in the same solar system as you, the same galaxy. Why didn't you think this through? Days in the future, but not many. You feel like sweeps and sweeps and sweeps have been taken off of your immortal life. You don't think she saw you. You don't think she saw you. The main reason you don't think she saw you is that she spent the entire conversation with Roxy needling her to try to figure out what the hell was going on inside her head, and you can't imagine why she would have faked that. You think she was seeing action without motivation, emotion without reason, and you are very, very grateful you didn't actually know that that CPR thing doesn't work on trolls. Dirk had drilled all of you on it, and he said it rarely worked at all on anyone, but was still worth trying. You don't know why she didn't see you, but you think that had something to do with it, that Roxy had seemed too incompetent in the last moment to be genuinely suspicious. Perhaps it was a void thing. Perhaps whatever this thing that you are that's inside of Roxy falls only under the category of heart.
AC doesn't know. And AC isn't going to find out. Because AC is never going to do this again. So Roxy Lalonde gets drunk one last time. One last time ever. And before she gets to the moon of Durst, Roxy Lalonde makes a bottle of her favorite soporific. And hides it where only a kitty could find it. And Roxy Lalonde makes a kitty to find it out of AC's heart, just in case of an emergency. And when Roxy Lalonde does get to the Moon of Durst, And she gives her a big hug. Tells her what she did. Says she's sorry. Roxy Lalonde tells Aishi it's okay. Says she doesn't mind. Says she's happy about it. But Roxy Lalonde is drunk. So Aishi doesn't know if Roxy Lalonde means it.
Sweeps in the future. But not many. The war is over. The unseen have won. The head of the convict decapitated is being paraded through the streets of the Moon of Durs, and you just lost your primary distraction. Distraction from what? Distraction from the fact that Roxy Lalonde is now Roxy Harley. And it's all your fault. You saw the whole thing play out through the eyes of Jasper the Splinter, the Second, whatever. It isn't that you're jealous. You aren't. That would be ridiculous. You've been dead for 15 sweeps. The problem is that it's all your fault. And you can't just stop looking. Well, you could. And you don't look when you shouldn't look, even though it's interesting, but you don't have a lot to do. You've been obsessively following Rose and Latch's vacillations like you. They're pale again. That one's your favorite. And no, of course you don't look at that either, even though that's really, really interesting, but you just... The point is that you need better hobbies. You could paint, but you're in a slump right now. You could hunt, but the war is over. You could obsess over Carapacean romance, but Carapacean romance is boring. Oh, okay, it isn't boring. You're sick of it. You're sick of everything, except one thing. You are not sick of pawing through the heart of Teresi Pyrope. This is something you really should be sick of, and you really, really should stop doing it because it is not healthy, but you can't. There's just so much of it, and you've still only scratched the surface. She's about 75,000 times as old as you are. And there just might be something in it that she missed, or something else in it that you missed, like what you missed during Operation Abscond, when you almost destroyed everything. You said it wasn't healthy. But you can't help but think that there might be something in there that would let you fix everything, too, or at least fix something, get you home, maybe. One day you're lying curled up on the floor of your old dream tower. You moved there soon after the war ended. And you're poring over the heart of Teresi Pyrope, like you shouldn't be doing, because it isn't healthy. And you need better hobbies. And you have a thought. It's a really, really, really interesting thought. Not that kind of interesting thought, but it is interesting and promising, and it leads to a new hobby. At first, it's just you. By yourself, but you really can't stop word from getting around. Now that the Moon of Durs is unified again, it really does work like one massive machine of people, and all of them like you. Soon signs can be seen on every street corner, proclaiming that the Rogue herself is looking for artifacts from the army of Krakercorp drones that was garrisoned here 15 sweeps ago. She wants everything. Intact units, parts, junk, even reclaimed metal. Anything at all. So long as it came from a Krakercorp assembly line, machine shop, or alchemizer. And she wants all of it taken to the core. It takes time to gather it all. Sweeps. But not many. It's dark in here. Dark and quiet and warm. And not too big to be cozy. And the scrap fills more than half of its volume. You inspected each piece of it as it came in, looking for something that you did not find, or if you did, was too small, too slight to detect. You hope. On Earthsea, the Troll Kingdom has just been liberated, the nation of Gaimeria founded. You allow yourself to be happy about that, even though it's yet another thing that Teresi Pyrope accounted for. You especially allow yourself to be happy that Mituna and Kanaya just turned 3. They're adorable. So are Becky and Zazarpan. It is thoughts of them that fill your mind as you light the match and throw it into the pit of metal, plastic, and oil. The flames race through the pit, building into an inferno. The inferno rises, power supplies add chemical fuel, and the core becomes a forge. The forge heats, smelts the scrap into one homogeneous white hot mass that refracts into a shimmering rainbow. The rainbow recedes like floodwaters spiraling down a drain, converging on a circular slab of stone. You don't know how Colonel Sprites work, but you do know how splinters work. You might even understand them better than Terezi Pirapi, who stood in this very spot 18 sweeps ago and told you that Aqueous Sahak was never here. She was wrong. His first moment of godhood is one of pain. Probably. You think? You don't know how robots work, either. Given the whole Jade thing, you had a feeling this would happen. In fact, you were counting on it. You watch in fascination as navy blue fabric appears around him and his metal body, still red hot, sets it alight and burns it away. The anime sunglasses on his face, however, do not burn away, but shine black amid the glow of his face.
Nepeta! Nepeta, is that you?
Hi.
Oh, good. It seems that my ocular sensors are overheating. Problem should be rectified in several minutes, or such is the claim of my internal diagnostics. But they're overheating as well, so they may not be reliable. I apologize for any inconvenience this may cause.
Aqueous, can I ask you something?
I command you to ask any question you wish.
What is that sound?
What sound, Nepeta?
That sound like... Thwip.
Do you mean...
Yes.
That is the sound of a shaft being loosed from a great hunting bow.
Oh, it's like when you type D hyphen hyphen greater than.
Yes. But I do not understand the source of your confusion. You've heard this sound many times before.
No, I haven't.
Yes, you have.
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 I've seen you type it. But I have never heard it, Aqueous.
Was it only in my head before now?
I miss you so much, Aqueous. I want to give you a big hug.
I would not advise this. The heat issue remains unresolved at this time.
I know.
Nepeta, why does your voice keep coming from various directions around me?
I'm looking for something.
What are you looking for?
Your heart. Or, well, not your heart exactly. Shequius, I'm really happy you're back. But the truth is, it isn't you I need to talk to.
I see. Oh, well. Figuratively, at any rate.
You find what you were looking for, and you find what you were looking for within what you were looking for. You grab onto it with all of your strength and pull, and you drag it, all of it, every last bit of it, up his spine, to his head, and into his stupid pair of anime sunglasses. They are cool to the touch. When you remove them from Aqueous's still smoldering face, they are cool to the touch. When you put them on your face.
T.T.
Hello.
Nepeta Legion. T.T. I thought you'd never find me. A.C.
No, you didn't.
T.T. No, I didn't. A.C.
Let's talk.
You do. You talk for nearly an hour. The whole time, Aqueous Bot stands there, almost motionless, his body slowly cooling as he waits. And watches, and through some mechanism that you don't understand because you don't know how robots work, actually sweats. When you and Hal are finished talking, you rip him off your face, throw him to the ground, and shatter him with your heel. You stomp on him, and stomp on him, and stomp on him until he is in many, many, many pieces. You don't stop until all of those pieces have stopped sparking. You turn back to Aqueous Bot, your lip quivering.
It had to be this way, Nepeta.
Shut up! Shut the fuck up!
Language!
No, you fucking start, Aqueous! I killed him so I wouldn't have to kill you! AC pounces at Aqueous Bot. Her claws scratch across his metal skin. She tries to dig them deeper, but they won't go. And Aqueous Bot paps her with his big, strong hands and goes shoosh until she stops trying to hurt him. And that isn't how things work anymore. But at least the paps are nice. So AC paps him back.
and her tears fall on his metal chest, and so do his. But they don't mix together, because his tears are made of oil now.
Be present, Latula. You have been craning your neck over Roxy's head for what feels like forever, searching, searching, and finally...
I got something.
You do?
You do?
Yeah, it's...
Jesus!
Her eyes open, your head whips backwards. Fucking ow.
Baby, are you okay?
Decent.
Oh, fuck.
Be careful, don't hit your hair, Latula. Latula.
Cholula.
Nailed it.
Dear fucking God.
I bet it hurts less than mine does, though.
How can you be hungover after being asleep for 30 minutes?
I got a lot of practice.
Did you learn anything?
If I did, I don't remember.
Fucking Christ, we just wasted...
Hold up, babe.
I don't think we did.
Oh, right. What did you find?
Her head feels funny.
Yes, hangovers are hilarious. Go fuck yourself, person.
No, like, you're feeling, like, really intense, really specific emotions.
All I can feel is like shit.
And you want really specific things.
Yeah, I want to feel not like shit, specifically.
Or you did. It's weaker now.
You're weaker now.
Mother, shut up.
Okay.
Actually, like, if you can just go back to sleep.
Okay.
Jesus. Roxy's ears flatten and you almost hear a growl.
I apologize for telling your wife to shut up, I guess. Is this really the time?
No. I'm not mad at you. I'm not even really mad at her. I'm just mad. Latch, are you at least getting a stronger, like, read?
Yeah, I can feel it better now.
What exactly are you feeling, Latula?
Well, it's not me, it's Mom.
Or whatever. What is it?
She loves somebody. She loves me. Like a lot, like more than usual.
What, like romantically?
No, and it went away just now. But I think it was more normal, like friend love, daughter love.
Wait, it just came back.
It went away when you said romantically, and it came back when I said friend and daughter. This is fucking weird, dude. And she wants to be close to me?
Like, close how? Like, close emotionally?
It went away?
Physically?
It came back.
Roxy wants you physically.
It went away. What, does it just mean, like, physical proximity?
Yeah, it's back. Mom loves me and wants me to stay near her. She just got really happy.
Whoa.
Okay, I just got flashes of something similar, but different. What the fuck? She misses...
Lejean? Be past Nepeta. It is not as though you are surprised when Zazerban Harley appears on Durs. You invited her here, after all. What surprises you is that when she appears 4 kilometers in the air. Plummeting. You tear a nook through the sky in pursuit, but Equius's jets are faster.
Catch her slowly, Equius. You have to fall with her, especially because you're made of metal.
I am one of the mathematics involved, Nepeta. More so, I dare say, than you.
Just catch her, Equius.
It'll be as you command.
Equius approaches the falling girl in a convergent arc and delicately plucks her out of the air. You catch up to him and follow him back to the ground. She's a mess. Digestive fluids splatter her shirt and skirt, and she lolls in a soporific stupor.
Nepeta, how much of the soporific did you encourage her to drink?
All of it.
Why did you do that, Nepeta?
Well, why not? She needed to get here in a hurry. Or a furry. Either one.
He takes off at speed, with Zazerpan still in his arms. You take off after him.
Equius, come back!
We must make haste!
I know we must! I have to do the hardy thing! Where are you going?
Nepeta, Zazerpan Harley is dying!
What? What do you mean she's dying?
The soporific is killing her, Nepeta!
What? Humans can die from soporifics?
When they indulge in excess, yes!
But she only have one drink!
Nepeta!
Her dumb, stupid mom had like 15 drinks every dumb, stupid night!
Nepeta!
Why do humans drink if they can fucking kill them?
You wait for him to bitch at you about language, so you can bitch back at him, and then you realize that you have stopped chasing him because he has stopped flying. Because you have both reached your destination. And so has Zazerpan Harley.
I did this.
Roxy's daughter.
This is my fault.
Jade's daughter.
I thought I could beat her.
I thought I could beat Terezi Parapi just because I know everything she knows. A million sweeps of memories, and I thought I could understand them in just 20. And no matter what I do, it feels like I'm just another way for Terezi Parapi to hurt people.
We need Zazapan Harley, Nepeta.
That's what Terezi said about me. That she needed me. But that was your idea too, wasn't it? You and sunglasses.
Terezi Parapi was always planning to do what she did to you.
I know. You just made me part of your plan too, like I did with Roxy. Like both of us are doing to Zazapan. I didn't mean to kill her, Aquaeus. I didn't know that's what I was doing. I just thought I was borrowing her.
It's dark in here. Dark and quiet and warm. And not too big to be cozy. It's still charred by the fires that gave rebirth to Aquaeus Sahak 2.5 sweeps ago upon a circular slab of stone. The same circular slab of stone that now bears the body of Zazapan Harley.
And now I made her part of the game forever.
She was already part of the game, Nepeta. She is void-bound. The soporific could never have brought her here if she wasn't. Nor would she ever have been suitable for the plan. And in truth, this latest development will make her even more suitable. The stronger she is, the better. Both for the plan and for her.
And why isn't it working?
That I do not know.
Is it because this isn't her Durse?
That doesn't matter. According to my knowledge of the Colonel, for any given aspect of Luna Sway, one slab is as good as another. It should be working. There must be some angle we are not considering.
Angle? That's it!
Nepeta, what are you doing?
It's the wrong shape, Aquaeus!
Nepeta, desist!
She, Aquaeus never saw a human reach God tier. But Terezi Parapi has, so she has too. And she knows that human slabs are not the same as troll slabs. AC uses her claws to scratch a rectangle on the circle. And Aquaeus keeps saying that's dumb and Scrub doesn't work that way, but AC doesn't budge until he gives in and smashes the sides away with his big, strong hoofs.
Be past Zazapan. Your first moment of godhood is one of pain.
See, I told you so.
I concede the point.
And confusion.
What the fuck is happening to me?
Right, hello, Zazapan. I'm really sorry.
And fear.
Oh my fucking god, it's Terezi Parapi. Oh my
where,
god,
how?
Oh my god, oh my god, oh
she
my
means
god,
you.
God, oh my god, oh my
what?
God, oh my god, oh my god.
I am not Terezi Parapi!
Screams the short female troll in the red outfit with her weird horse-adjacent robot bodyguard thing. You double over as the twin agonies on your back get even worse.
What the fiddlesticks?
Okay. Zazapan, you're growing wings. Why are you doing that, Aquaeus? Why is she growing wings?
It hurts so much. Oh, fuck. Oh, God. Oh, it'll
pass quicker than you think. Oh, fuck. I hate this so much.
Be strong.
You stop shaking. The pain is gone. You can stand. You can fly. Blood-red gossamer wings hum in your peripheral vision as you float for a moment.
Aquaeus, I can't do this to her.
You must.
I don't care.
This happens, or the timeline is doomed.
I don't care!
You set yourself down and notice that you're wearing boots. They go up to your knees and are similar, but not identical, to the ones that the batshit insane troll lady in front of you is wearing. Actually, what she's wearing looks just like what your mom wears a lot of the time. That thing that the adults call a godhood. The one the troll lady's wearing isn't red like Crocker Corp. It's red like what Uncle Dirk wears. This isn't Terezi Parapi.
You're Nepeta Lejean, aren't you?
She whirls around so fast you actually see olive-colored tears whip off of her face.
You know who I am?
I live in a huge fucking tower that was named after you. There's a statue of you in the lawn ring outside.
I'm a statue?
Duh. You're a hero. You saved the world. Mom and Mom talk about you sometimes.
She lurches toward you and you don't back away.
What kind of stuff did it... No, never mind that. Zazerpan, I'm sorry about what just happened to you. I didn't know it was going to happen, but it was still my fault and I'm sorry. I didn't have a choice. No, that's a lie. I did. I did have a choice. And I chose for you. And I'm not choosing for you about what comes next.
Nepeta.
This is how I'm doing this, Aqueous. Fuck the timeline. She chooses this or it doesn't happen.
She's a child.
She's as old as we were. Almost. And it's still her problem whether she's old enough for it or not. She deserves to know what's going to happen and why, and make the choice herself.
We don't have time for explanations, Nepeta.
Yes, we do. Because I'm a really good rogue of heart now. What are you two talking about? What are you going to do to me? I'll show you.
She presses one finger to your chest, just below the collarbone, and feelings course through you like waves, carrying with them images, concepts, plans that explode into your mind like fireworks in a deep blue evening sky.
Don't look at it too close. You just need to get the important stuff. You got it?
Breathing heavily, you nod. She pulls her finger away. The fireworks stop.
You're my sister's cat. Is that really all you took away from that?
No, I understand.
You know what's going on.
I know what's going on.
Okay, then. So, clear his throat. Ahem, ahem. Zazerpan Harley. Want to save the world?
She's smiling when she says it, but it doesn't fool you. It isn't trying to fool you. You look over at Aqueous Bot, who is tapping one hoof impatiently. You look back at Nepeta Les Jean, at her big sad olive eyes that wish they didn't know goddamn everything.
Hell yeah.
Thank you, Zazerpan.
Nepeta, we are out of time.
One hand on your chest, one hand on Aqueous Bot's chest. She closes her eyes and concentrates.
Okay, this might hurt. I don't know. I've never done a full swap before.
Nepeta, now!
Here goes!
A very, very, very short girl stands on a stone slab across from you. She is wearing an outfit exactly the same color as the one your mom wears all the time. She has wings exactly the same color as Karkat's, but shaped more elegantly. At a snap of the girl's fingers, her wings vanish, her clothes return to normal, but her face remains yours.
Be careful with me.
Unfortunately, given the circumstances, I cannot.
I know.
So I will ask no reciprocity from you.
Sick.
The girl looks down and seems almost to meditate. A shimmer of navy blue envelops her. She stops. Being interesting to look at, you stop looking at her. You are vaguely aware that there is a third person in the chamber with you and Nepeta. You wonder who they are, where they came from. And then you stop wondering because you don't care. And then there is no one in the chamber but you and Nepeta.
Oh, that was so weird.
It's gonna work, Zazerpan. It's gonna work!
You look around for a moment, flicking through the various optical filters available to the cameras you now call eyes. Then you turn back to Nepeta.
It's like, where the fuck are we? Wait. Fuck. Oh, come the fuck on!
Past Aqueous. Be past Zazerpan. You return to Zazerpan Harley's respite block with just minutes to spare, and slump down on her bed in an appropriate posture of repose. You see a blinding flash of light. You see the hand of John Egbert reach towards you, and you ready yourself. You see a blinding flash of light. You feel a needle stab into Zazerpan Harley's forearm. As the soporific cocktail flows into her bloodstream, You radiate exactly the right kind of void, in such a way that it takes in not only Zazerpan Harley, but also Becky Harley, Mituna Lalonde, and Kanaya Lalonde.
You really do have the best ideas, Arkles. This is going to be amazing.
Anything to further the narrative, my good bit.
Behind his shimmering, well-muscled back, Aqueous Sprite gives you a thumbs up. If the splinter of Aqueous Sahak that is you was still being Aqueous Bot or part of Aqueous Sprite, you would now see 15,377 blinding flashes of light simultaneously. But you are not currently being Aqueous Bot or part of Aqueous Sprite. You are being Zazerpan Harley. So you see only one blinding flash of light as John Egbert, now much older, takes you from this moment in time to the climax of the 15,377th iteration of Operation Latchkey. Terezi Pyrope is blind, so it all looks the same to her. The Homestuck Fan Author Coalition is a place for authors to write, brainstorm, discuss, and collaborate. Link available in description. The music is .413 Repeating, composed and produced by Sam Gabriel. Special thanks to Sakiko. If you would like me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch with me using the contact information on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find links to other stories that I've read, my Discord server, and various ways to support me. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.